May it please the court, my name is Chris Angel. It is my privilege to be here this morning on behalf of the appellant, State Farm Mutual Automobile Insurance Company. The issue in this case is whether a healthcare provider is required to submit its bills to an insurer within 6 months of the date of service or within 6 months of being provided with the name and address of that insurer. Now, there's a statute, Section 62Q.75, Subdivision 3, that so requires, and State Farm's opposition to Ms. Nichols' claim is predicated exclusively on that statute. And to reverse the district court in this court need only apply the express language of that statute. I'll very briefly recite the facts of the case. This involves an accident that occurred in November of 2014 involving Ms. Nichols. Ms. Nichols was insured, had automobile insurance through State Farm at the time of the accident. And on the date of the accident, Ms. Nichols treated at North Memorial, their emergency department.
Can I ask you, Mr. Angel?
Yes, sir.
Using your phraseology, the express language of the statute, is it not undisputed here that Ms. Nichols indeed did submit, or the provider did, within 6 months, charges to a health plan company?
Yes, that is undisputed that Ms. Nichols...
Why would that not simply resolve the matter? It would be to your disfavor, I suspect.
Well, that's all right. I mean, let's talk about that. I mean, and that's what the district court found. The district court found that the statute was satisfied in this case because North Memorial submitted its charges to UCARE, which is Ms. Nichols' health insurer. The reason why that's not good enough, I mean, we've got a couple of different points to make on that issue, but first of all, when you look at the statute itself, and I've got a copy of it pulled out in front of me, I imagine the court has all of that stuff, and I don't know that it's any benefit that I read the language, but the first part of the statute, you're right, requires submission of bills to a health plan company or third-party administrator. But the second part of that same provision, it's not even in a different sentence, when it talks about the timing requirements, says within 6 months of the date of service or the date on which the provider knew the correct name and address of the responsible insurer. State Farm respectfully submits to the court that the reference to responsible in the second part of that provision references health plan company in the first part of that provision. And let me tell you why.
Just before you do that.
Yes, Your Honor.
You use the phrase that was a timing requirement. Would that not be with the disjunctive or referencing the timeline as opposed to whom you send it to?
It does.
Or your timeline can be extended 6 months from the date you know of the responsible insurer.
Right, so you could have a situation where a health plan, somebody gets healthcare treatment, and the provider simply isn't aware of any insurer. They're not aware. They don't know who to bill. I think the purpose of that provision containing that alternative requirement is to say, look, if the provider doesn't know of any insurer within 6 months, well, then we're not going to hold them to submitting the bills within 6 months of the date of service. If they find out about an insurer sometime after the date of service, then we're going to give them from 6 months from the day that they find out who the insurer is. And I think that's fair to say that's the rationale behind having that alternative timing requirement.
Isn't it true here, though, Ms. Nichols, she knew who her insurer was. They asked, who's your insurer? And she gave her primary health insurer. They send the bill within the 6 months. Now, it's true, ultimately, who's going to be responsible, whether it's no fault or the primary insurer. But isn't that a fair, direct, explicit reading of this unambiguous language?
It's a little more complicated than that in this case. You're right. The bills were submitted to UCARE, Ms. Nichols' health insurer. But what makes this case unique and what makes this case different is that at the time those bills were submitted to UCARE, North Memorial knew that State Farm was the responsible insurer. And the reason why we know that North Memorial knew that is because the emergency room visit that Ms. Nichols made on the date of the accident, the bill for that particular visit, and that visit only, was in fact submitted to and paid in full by State Farm.
Isn't the whole point of the economic loss, the no-fault benefits, to eliminate an injured party from having to worry about whether their medical billing is being submitted to the right party?
Well, and that's a fair point, but remember the statute doesn't put any burden on Ms. Nichols. If the provider botches or, you know, fails to submit their charges to the responsible insurer within 6 months, it doesn't become Ms. Nichols' problem. I mean, the statute itself says if the provider doesn't submit their charges within that six-month period, nobody's responsible for it, including Ms. Nichols.
So what you're saying is effectively the way this would play out then is North Memorial is without the ability to be compensated because it's their billing error.
Right. That's exactly right.
You make a mistake, right. You live with the consequences.
That's exactly right, and I think that's a fair reading what the statute says. Provider makes a mistake in their billing, they may not be reimbursed, and they may not collect the charge from the recipient of the service or any other payer. I think that's a direct quote.
What I'm trying to understand is how that would be a mistake, though they complied by the letter of the law by sending it to the insurer. It didn't say the responsible insurer at that point. If I understand correctly, you're asking the court to insert that language in the first half of that sentence, which I understand if we wouldn't be here if indeed it said that.
But that's a fair question, and let me do my best to address it. First of all, I respectfully disagree that that's what the statute says. I think when you read that provision in its entirety, that responsible in that second sentence or that second clause in that provision modifies health plan company in the first clause. And let me tell you why. Well, first of all, I think that's the plain reading of the statute. But second of all, is to interpret the statute in the way that Ms. Nguyen would like you, or Ms. Nichols would like you to, or the district court interpreted it, would lead to an absurd result. Okay? And here's why it's absurd. It's absurd to say that a health provider, even though it knows who the responsible insurer is, which in this case I don't think there's any serious dispute that North Memorial knew it was State Farm and they just screwed up for whatever reason. I don't even think Mr. Moss knows why they did what they did. But it would be absurd to say in that circumstance when a provider knows who the responsible insurer is that they can nevertheless satisfy the statute by sending the bill to some other insurer. And that absurdity was recognized by Judge Susan Burke in the State Farm versus Mather decision that we attached to our addendum in this case. She reached the complete opposite decision of Judge Peterson. But one other...
Well, you seem to be suggesting that if we don't adopt your interpretation of the statute, we will be encouraging healthcare providers to intentionally send their bills to companies that have nothing to do with their patients.
No, and if I came across that way, then
well,
I didn't mean to.
But I mean, what's the
healthcare provider would actually have incentive to send it to the no-fault insurer, which kind of gets to the next point that I was going to make.
Okay, yeah, help me understand why.
Yeah, they'd actually be better off. Again, nobody knows why North Memorial did this. Again, they had clear, it's clear they knew it was State Farm. I don't know if somebody in the billing department fell asleep or what happened. But remember that no-fault insurers, unlike health insurers, no-fault insurers pay full freight. Health insurers, as I'm sure the court is aware, typically pay some discounted amount. So they get a bill for $1,000 and they pay $600 of it.
So there's the prejudice here, to your client?
No, and that's not the basis for our argument. My point was simply that a healthcare provider doesn't have an incentive to intentionally do what North Memorial did in this case. I'm sure if North Memorial had it to do it over, they would have submitted them to State Farm. They just screwed up. But a related point, the practical effect of interpreting the statute in the manner in which Ms. Nichols would like you to, and it relates to the point that you just made, is it would provide a financial motivation for persons like Ms. Nichols to have their bills submitted to their health insurer. And the reason why is because of the reason I just told you. A health insurer pays cents on the dollar. So somebody like Ms. Nichols would have a financial reason to have their bills submitted to their health insurer, paid at some sort of a discount, and then commence a no-fault arbitration against their no-fault insurer and seek the full costs. Why? Because they get a windfall. As Judge Peterson recognized, even in his order, that this interpreting the statute in the manner in which Ms. Nichols wants you to interpret it results in a windfall to Ms. Nichols.
Mr. Angel, this presupposes when she goes into a clinic, she's pondering, okay, should I give them the no fault or the health because of this reduction, because of, and this was some months later, as I understand it. What I'm trying to get to, you say they screwed up, so what you would suggest the statute imposes upon the billing clerk or even the nurse you first see is, well, who's your healthcare provider, and to discern the purpose that she's there that day, and is it related to the auto accident, is it related to my general health condition, is it maybe related to both? But isn't the statute simply encouraging prompt billing and payment providers, and then we'll sort out subrogation issues and who's ultimately responsible later?
Yeah, no, I don't think it necessarily puts an onus on a provider to find out right away who the insurer is. Remember, they've got that timing requirement, that timing provision in the second part of that clause that says within 6 months after you know. I don't think that the statute imposes a burden upon a nurse or a billing clerk to ascertain that information.
Wouldn't it be true, though, if they waited 181 days and haven't sent a bill to anyone, they'd be out by
no,
the statute?
No. Because remember, that statute says within 6 months of the date of service or within 6 months of the date on which they're notified of the correct name and address of the responsible insurer. If they do service, wait 181 days because they have no idea who the responsible insurer is, on day 182, they find out, they could submit their bill to that insurer and they would be fine timely under the language of the statute.
So you're reading that statute, the or, the disjunctive, which appears to talk only about timing, but you are reading that to mean it's plain language also to whom you send it. So if they waited a year and then send it to State Farm, at that point, they would still be fine if they can show that 6 months ago we found out, and so a year from that appointment, that's how you read.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's really the crux of the issue in this case, is that there isn't any dispute, I don't think, that North Memorial knew. North Memorial knew who they were supposed to send their bills to. They sent the very first bill to the responsible insurer. And what Ms. Nichols is asking the court to say is, even though that North Memorial knew who the responsible insurer was virtually from the outset, that they complied with the statute by thereafter submitting subsequent bills to some other insurer that they knew wasn't the responsible insurer. And that's really the issue here. Once a provider knows who the responsible insurer is, as we have in this case, then yes, the State Farm's position, and I think it's a fair reading of the statute, is that from that moment, they've got 6 months to submit bills for any prior services that they performed. And then, of course, from that point forward, you know, obviously you can't bill for a service you haven't provided yet, but from that point forward, they would be subject to the first part, within six months of the date of service. Does that make sense?
So you believe, however, though, that statute is unambiguous.
You're unambiguously
reading it different than Ms. Nichols does.
Right. Well, so let's talk about that. Let's say that I'm wrong. Let's say you disagree and you think that statute's ambiguous. Well, then you've got to engage in statutory construction. And statutory construction is governed by the canons of construction that are set forth in Minnesota Chapter 645.
But what I'm getting at, though, is that, and I assume we'll hear that in a moment, I saw from the briefs that you both agree it's unambiguous, you're reading it differently.
Yes, okay. I think that's a fair statement, yes. I see that I'm I see that I'm virtually out of time, so
You'll have your
I'll wrap it up, and if I have something else to say, I'll say it later. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Nathan Moss. I represent Sharia Nichols, the respondent. Before I get to the argument section, I wanted to address an error in our brief. It is at page 7 of our brief, paragraph 2. There is a quote that was attributed to the Wynn decision. That quote was actually taken from the district court's memorandum accompanying the order. It's a misquote. There is an internal quotation to the Wynn decision, but that quote should have actually been moved directly before the portion where it says the general purpose of the prompt payment statute. We apologize for any confusion that may have caused. This case is about statutory interpretation and the available facts in front of this court. State Farm is attempting to have the state of Minnesota bear the burden for medical expenses that State Farm owes by denying payment of benefits that Ms. Nichols paid them for, that they're statutorily required to provide under the Minnesota No Fault Act. They're attempting to do this by asking this court to ignore the plain language of an unambiguous statute and interpret it based on a fictitious legislative intent. There are two reasons the district court order should be affirmed. The first one is based on the plain language of the statute. The second one is based on the factual record in front of this court. As for the plain language of the statute, as Judge Slater pointed out, the pertinent portion of the statute reads, healthcare providers must submit their charges to a health plan company within 6 months of the date of service or the date the healthcare provider knew or was informed of the correct name and address of the responsible health plan company, whichever is later. The statute's unambiguous. As Judge Slater pointed out, all the statute requires to satisfy the requirements is that a healthcare provider submit the charges to a health plan company of the recipient of services within 6 months.
Counsel, is there anything in this record that tells us why North Memorial submitted those first that first bill to State Farm and then submitted the rest of the bills to UCARE?
I believe there is, Your Honor.
And what is that? Because I am wondering whether or not if a patient seeks counsel and then counsel says, well, have the balance of those bills, tell your provider to send the balance of the bills to your health care company. So what happened here?
Well, that was the factual portion of our argument. I'll just jump right to that. So counsel for appellant stated numerous times in the briefing here today that it's a fact that North Memorial knew that State Farm was the responsible payer. That is not a fact that was found anywhere in this record. The arbitrator didn't find that. The district court didn't find that. What State Farm is doing is they're saying that, well, because North Memorial billed a portion of the emergency room bills to State Farm, that it therefore knew that all of the at-issue treatment was related. That is an inference that can be drawn from that bill. However, it's not in the record anywhere. More importantly, it's not even the most likely inference that could be drawn from the record that's available here. The record that's available here consists of one medical record, as far as medical records are concerned. It's from the hospital intake when she was brought in by the ambulance. It is attached to, at the district court, it was Exhibit 4 of Mr. Angel's affidavit accompanying his memorandum of law in support of the motion to vacate. This medical record states, the very first note on it states, Sharin Nichols is a 45-year-old female with a history of hypertension and chronic back pain who presents the emergency department via EMS for evaluation following a motor vehicle crash. The very first notation in that record is she's got a history of back pain before this crash ever happened. That record goes on to continue. Here in the emergency department, the patient complains of moderate posterior neck pain, diffuse back pain, a headache, and right wrist pain. The staff at North Memorial knows that she didn't have a headache before this, she didn't have a neck pain before this, she didn't have wrist pain before this, but she did have back pain. They have no way of determining when she's there what's related to what. So if we look at the actual bills that were submitted here, what North Memorial did is they submitted all the charges for the head, the wrist, the headache to State Farm. The charges for the low back treatment, that went to UCare, because for all that North Memorial knew, that's a pre-existing condition that she had before she ever showed up.
Okay, but you're speculating. We don't have anything in the record that tells us what North Memorial was thinking. You're telling us what you think happened.
Your Honor, respectfully, I'm saying this is what the record says, and this is how they billed it.
Okay, we know that's how they billed it.
Yep. And it's important to note out that all of the at-issue medical treatment here was for low back pain, low back SI joint pain. This treatment, the next day to service after the emergency room, didn't occur until 6 months later. She came back 6 months later. We don't have the medical records, but we have the billing statement that shows that it was for low back and sacrum treatment. There's nothing in this record that shows that North Memorial had any idea what happened to Ms. Nichols in that 6 months. Was she involved in a new accident? Did she suffer a new injury? Did the old injury resolve? And was all of this related to a pre-existing condition? The point is that the record in front of this court, there is no factual finding that North Memorial knew. And the most logical inference that can be drawn with the record that's available to this court is that they didn't know. As Mr. Angel pointed out, it is in North Memorial's interest, if it wants to get more money, to bill State Farm for these services. They didn't do that because they did what they probably should have done. They were uncertain as to whether the back injury was related to the crash, so they billed her primary health insurance, UCare. As Judge Slater pointed out, a lot of times this is what providers are confronted with when they're trying to determine what is caused by what.
Okay, but in the record that we have, there's no affidavit, there's no deposition testimony, there's no fact evidence from somebody saying I screwed up that would let us know how this happened.
There's not, Your Honor. And that's why I want to point out here, the issue that was framed in appellant's brief was that when they know that the responsible payer is State Farm, do they also have to submit it to them? That is a factual finding that was not made anywhere in this record. And this is the bed that State Farm made, and this is the bed that they have to lie in. It's relying on a factual finding that, quite frankly, isn't here.
Mr. Moss, yep. As I anticipated, you both agree the statute's unambiguous, but mm-hmm. you're suggesting to the court we ought to read it exactly a different opposite. So assuming... And I understand your point about factually, but let's assume we find in the record, yes, they knew. Mm-hmm. Would you agree then with State Farm, for both looking at the same statute that's unambiguous, she doesn't get it?
I would disagree with State Farm, and I would agree with Your Honor's original interpretation of it, is that all that's required under the statute is that they submit the bills to a health plan company within 6 months of the date of service. And the health plan company has to be to the recipient of service. That's because the statute has the word or in it. It is a disjunctive test. And what State Farm is asking this court to do for an unambiguous statute is change the word or and make it an end. Or the only other option would be that would coalesce with their interpretation of the statute would be in the first part of the sentence where the legislature wrote a health plan company, change that to the responsible health plan company. And if you reread the statute with their changes to it, the statute doesn't make any sense anymore because the language, whichever comes later, is completely irrelevant. Does that answer your question, Your Honor?
Yes.
I also want to address the Wynn decision. State Farm relies on that. It's helpful here, but it actually helps Ms. Nichols. It actually mandates that that the district court's order be affirmed, because the Wynn decision was a situation where there was no charges submitted to any health insurer, none. And what the Wynn court found was because the medical provider didn't submit the charges to any health plan company within 6 months, they were not allowed to collect against Ms. Nichols. Because they were not allowed to collect against Ms. Nichols, she did not suffer a loss under the No Fault Act. Here, it's undisputed in the record, Judge Peterson's order, both page 2 and 5, show that UCare paid the bills. They are asserting a subrogation right, which means that there is a loss to Ms. Nichols under the record. Because of that, Nguyen actually mandates that the district court orders be affirmed. And that's what the district court used to decide this case. It used the two issues of the plain language of the statute and the fact that there was a loss that took it outside of the Nguyen decision. And we, are asking that this court hold the same based on the plain language of statute. I believe that the rule is, according to the plain language of statute, is if a healthcare provider submits its charges to a health plan company of the recipient of services within 6 months of the date of service, it satisfies the requirements of the statute. That's what the district court used. And quite frankly, the district court didn't have to then also make a factual finding of whether North Memorial knew or didn't know, and that's why we have a pretty sparse record here on that particular issue. I would point out that I think that if this court rejects Ms. Nichols' argument based on the plain language of the statute and does entertain that it also needed to be submitted to State Farm, even though UCARE had already paid the bills, at most that doesn't require a reversal of district court orders. At most it requires a remand to the district court for that necessary factual finding. I want to point out real quickly the consequences of adopting State Farm's interpretation of the statute. What would happen is the bills that were submitted to UCARE and the subrogation interest that it created would be wiped out. Keep in mind, North Memorial was already paid for this treatment. UCARE already paid that. And State Farm's interpretation of the statute would extinguish their rights of subrogation. That is going to touch off quite a firestorm because this UCARE plan was a medical assistance plan administered by the state of Minnesota. Conversely, our interpretation of the statute actually mandates that State Farm, who contracted to pay these exact benefits, pays what it should have paid and paid what it contracted to. UCARE and the state of Minnesota gets refunded the money for the benefits it extended on Ms. Nichols' behalf. And North Memorial, who by the factual record available to the court here did nothing wrong, gets to keep the payments that it made. I think that is actually the right outcome.
Would you agree, Mr. Moss? Just, we only get to that stage, however, which I'm neither counsel is asking as to, is if the statute's ambiguous, and now we start after reading into the purpose and then possible absurdities. That's what you're responding to at that point.
I am, Your Honor. And one thing that I wanted to point out, the error in our brief, circling back to where I started here, the error in our brief, it wasn't argued here today, but it was argued at the district court by Mr. Angel and State Farm. The argument was that this whole statute, the whole purpose of the statute is to protect insurers like State Farm from stale claims. And the reason that quote was in there was to show that that is not the stated purpose of the statute. That language doesn't occur anywhere in the statute. And it's only by interpreting this statute through that lens, which is not the actual legislative purpose of the statute, that State Farm's interpretation of the statute could make any sense. Because if you look at the plain language of it, the legislature was careful in its words. It used a health plan company in the first part of the sentence, used an or, and then the responsible health plan company. I can see my time is winding down here. If there's no questions.
Thank you, Mr. Moss. I thought you were.
If you've heard enough, then I'll just sit down. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Angel, you have rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. There's just a few points that I want to address. We know that the parties disagree. They agree the statute is unambiguous. They disagree what that means. I'm not going to spend any more time addressing that. But let's talk about a few things that Mr. Moss just told you. Purpose of the statute is not to prevent stale claims. Well, that's not true. Okay. The purpose of this statute, when it was first enacted in 2000, and it was the first two subdivisions of it, was to require insurers to pay promptly. Okay, prompt payment required. That's the title of the statute. But those are the first two subdivisions. The subdivision that we care about, and the only one that matters, is Subdivision 3, which was added later in 2005. And it has only to do with when a provider must submit their claims to an insurer. It is clearly the only purpose of that provision is to prevent the submission of stale claims to an insurer. So I take issue with that. Consequences. If you rule in favor of State Farm in this case, it wipes out UCARE's subrogation right. So what? There are lots of people that have legal rights that because a statute wasn't complied with or some law wasn't complied with, they forfeit those rights. Statute of limitations, easy example. That happens all the time. The fact that UCARE would be out the money that it paid for Ms. Nichols' treatment isn't a reason to disregard the unambiguous language of the statute. I want to talk about, again, the issue about whether there's proof that North Memorial knew that State Farm was responsible insurer. I mean, what is an insurer in State Farm's position supposed to do? How else is someone like me supposed to demonstrate to the court that North Memorial knew that State Farm was a responsible insurer? I provided you with the bill that they presented on the date of the accident. If that doesn't constitute proof that North Memorial knew, what else could I do to satisfy that? And there's no evidence as to why it is that North Memorial did what they did. The last thing I want to talk about, because I think it's important, is this issue about whether or not Ms. Nichols suffered a loss. And I would submit to the court that she has not. Okay? There's no evidence in this record, either here in front of the district court, in front of the arbitrator, anywhere, that UCARE has a subrogation right. There's never been any evidence of that. There's no evidence that UCARE has a right of reimbursement. Now, I think it's fair to say they probably do, because that's typically what health insurers do. They have a right of reimbursement. But that right of reimbursement can be exercised if and only if Ms. Nichols recovers those expenses from some other source.
Mr. Angel, how does that square with the Stout decision that's identified a loss being incurred if there's a billing? And essentially it tracks it back, and here there's a bill, she had services. Does that not fit that definition or 65B of a loss?
Well, remember, if she's not responsible for the payment, think about your own health insurer. You go in, you get health you have treatment, your health insurer pays for it. Do you have any obligation to reimburse your health insurer? No, none of us do. The only thing the health insurer has in this context is a right of reimbursement. To the extent you ever get that money from somebody else, then you got to pay me back.
One thing, hasn't the Stout decision defined what a loss is, when a loss is incurred, and that's been met here by that Stout reasoning?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the Stout decision, as I understand it, was simply limited to whether or not a person like Ms. Nichols can recover the difference between the amount that was paid by her health insurer and the amount that was actually billed. And I think Stout held, yes, she can't, because the no-fault insurer doesn't get the benefit of the agreement that she had with her health insurer. But I don't know that Stout had anything to do with whether or not the bills were timely submitted in the first place. That issue had come up in that case. Maybe we'll reach a different decision. I think Stout is fair for what it stands for, but I don't think it has any application here. Again, with respect to a loss, there's no right to reimbursement unless Ms. Nichols recovers from another source. Okay? There's no evidence that she's recovered from another source. The other source that you would think, well, maybe she did recover from, is Mr. Robinson, the at-fault driver in this case. There's no evidence that Ms. Nichols recovered any expenses from Mr. Robinson. And even if she had, let's presume that she had. She made a claim against Mr. Robinson as part of the settlement of the claim. Mr. Robinson, here's your $3,300 for the amount that UCARE paid on your behalf. She still suffered no loss, right? Because she got it from Mr. Robinson. Right? Ms. Nichols hasn't suffered any loss. Okay? Which kind of gets back to what I was talking about before. If the court interprets the statute the way Ms. Nichols wants you to interpret it, and I'm not suggesting that Ms. Nichols did anything nefarious in this case, but what I am saying is that for future claims, people like Ms. Nichols, people in that same situation, will have a financial incentive to have their bills submitted to their health insurer so that then they can circle back around, like Ms. Nichols did in this case, and again, I'm not suggesting it was intentional, and recover a windfall is basically what it comes down to. But Ms. Nichols has not incurred a loss. I dispute that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your time has expired, but thank you. Thank you to both counsel for appearing today and supplementing the briefs with your oral argument. A decision will be issued within the statutory time frame. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob.